Breakfast Fridays.
I mix what I like.
Yo, Jinx, man, we gotta find somebody that's down for hers, man. All these girls sipping, man. Who you think fit the category?
It's me, the brand new intelligent black woman, Y-O-Y-O, which is Yo-Yo. But I'm about to be played like I was made by Mattel. But this Yo-Yo was made by woman and male. I'm all about upright, loving, and the warming. Felt like our superior to handle any male, any time, any rhyme, any flow, and any show. And if you ask my producers, they'll reply, no.
Say to your competitors.
Well, personally, it's like this.
Welcome to I Mix What I Like right here at WPFW 89.3 FM.
good Black Fist Friday to you. At I Mix What I Like for all your relevant social media. I Mix What I Like at gmail.com for direct communication with the program. And of course, I Mix What I Like.org for more on this show and more. We opened up the show this morning a little bit differently, but with some classic music from Yo-Yo. Because in a few minutes, in just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Miss Jamila Lemieux, who, among many other things, is a fantastic writer who has just put together, I think, a very important piece about the latest film, Straight Outta Compton. Still your number one movie going into this week, or ending this week. But we want to have a conversation. And I'm couching it sort of, this show, in broader, you know, more broadly speaking, as a tribute to the women who were left out of the Straight Outta Compton movie, who are left out of that number one movie. So Yo-Yo was one of them. And until I read a piece, one by Jamila Lemieux and one by Dee Barnes, also left out of the film, I had actually forgotten that Yo-Yo and some of these other sisters, well, not Michelle A, that one I did catch, but Yo-Yo was one that I did not even catch as being someone who was not in the film. And I'm like, how could you not catch that? Especially because I really used to like Yo-Yo. Like a lot. So musically, we're going to have a tribute this hour to the women left out of the Straight Outta Compton film. We started off with two tracks there, as I said again, by Yo-Yo. Can't Play With My Yo-Yo featuring Ice Cube and Ain't Nobody Better off of her 1990 album. So anyway, we're going to deal with that and with Ms. Jamila Lemieux in just a few minutes. Dr. Haight is out handling the people's business, as is Dr. Burroughs. So I'm solo this morning. Red Eagle is on the boards, making sure things sound as they're supposed to. Very quickly, I want to thank everybody who came out last week to our Real News Network George Jackson the screening of our video mixtape George Jackson Releasing the Dragon, the intro for which you can still find it at mixwhatilike.org. There's been a slight delay because it was so well received, and because we think it can be a lot bigger than we initially even thought. There's been a slight delay, so I don't want people to misunderstand what's happening in its full release, only because we want to see if we can't clear a couple of things up so that this thing can get a much wider a distribution. Honestly, folks who were bigger players in this liked it more than I want to do things that I had not even thought were you know, going to be possible with it, though it's deserving of it. So we're going to see. So we'll wait a little while. So there's no drama. There's no other issues. So people have asked me where it is, because I kept saying it was supposed to have been out this last month. It is coming. And those who were there in attendance to see the screening of it in Baltimore last week, shout out to even WPFW's own Net for Freeman for being there. You know, they know how dope it is, and it's coming. So thanks to them for that as well. But real quick, before we get to Jamila Lemieux and this conversation about Straight Outta Compton, the film, Dr. Haight had linked us up with these good folks from Freedom Paper Company. So we want to take just a quick moment to talk with Kamosi Muhammad, who I believe is on the phone with us. We want to welcome him to the program and get a quick word or two about this Freedom Paper Company. Kamosi Muhammad, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hey.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Thanks again for joining us here at I Mix What I Like in WPFW 89.3 FM. So in a quick word, what is the Freedom Paper Company? I mean, it seems very interesting, and you're definitely seeming to fill an important void here. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, again, thank you, brother, for having us on the air this morning and your listening audience. Well, let me say in a quick word that Freedom Paper Company is more than just a business, and we need a lot more businesses in the Black community. Tremendously, we would say so. But to that avail, we represent what we consider to be the new economic paradigm. Because we need more businesses, that's true. But we need businesses that are not caught up in the ideology of capitalism within itself. We have to do something more. We need something new. We need something different, something bigger and bolder to change the conditions that we see currently existing among our people today. And so Freedom Paper Company represents that reality. We are the example of what should be done and what can be done, because we're building an industry, not just a business, but an industry in the paper goods, food service, Jansan, janitorial-like chemical, and stationary products industries.
So just, I mean, so how exactly does your economic model challenge capitalism, which I fully agree needs to be challenged and dealt with? What in your model, can you tell us a little bit more about that? What in your model addresses the problems posed by capitalism?
Absolutely. So, I mean, in short, the ideology of capitalism is simply winner take all, take all that you can, the resources, and when you garner all of the wealth and resources that you can, then in capitalism, you win. But that's not a working model for us. It certainly is, it's known that slavery itself was the fuel to build up capitalism. And so when we look at businesses that are controlled and owned by ourselves, we should not be following a model that absolutely put us in the worst possible situation historically as a people. Mm-hmm. So what we do is called wealth circulation, wealth creation, wealth circulation. And it is part of the African heritage, if you will, our African culture, communalism. And so we share wealth. We, of course, as any business, have to make money. But it's not about us simply keeping it all, garnishing it all, hoarding it all. It's about sharing it, passing it through mechanisms like organizations in our community schools, which we've already done in just our short 4 years of business. And not, as you and maybe others know, the business cycle, it generally takes somewhere really between 5 and 10 years for a business to become fairly founded, meaning it has capacity, capability to exist and continue on. Well, in just 4 years, we've already proven that we could put money back into the community to begin to build us up, strengthen us in a number of ways in just 4 years with the little resources that we've been able to garner thus far.
Well, you at least touch on a very good point, important point, that, I mean, the issue with socialism, for instance, is not that there won't be a surplus generated, it's just what is done with the surplus. That's the issue. So you do have to generate a surplus, and then the difference, it sounds like, that you're addressing, you know, challenging capitalism, is what you're doing with the surplus you're creating, or the profit, as it's called, and some, you know, can be called, that you're making. So that sounds fantastic. Very quickly, tell us, you did mention, I want to make sure people do understand what they're hearing when you outline the kind of products that you all service. So, when you talk about paper products, I see on your website that you do everything from bathroom and paper towel, tissue paper, etc., to what you described earlier as light chemicals, and a number of other things. Maybe you could just say another word or two about the products and the services you all offer that sound worthy of support, if for no other reason. I mean, people need these products, and you are, I think, raising an important challenge to our prevailing economic model.
Absolutely. Well, here's the big thing. Our foundational product is bathroom tissue. And when we ask the question, and when we're in certain circles, you know, raise your hand if you don't use it. No one raises their hand. So we know that it's a valuable product within itself, but we do bathroom tissue, paper towels, both commercially and residentially. And we're moving now. The thing we have to do is we have to get our people to support our businesses. 94% of our businesses cannot or do not employ people. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at our economic condition overall, we have to begin to look at ourselves. We should challenge the exterior forces that are rendering us harm and giving us obstacle. But we have to challenge ourselves, because when we look at other communities, for example, if we're about 26, 27 billion people, a million people in this country, compared to the Asian community, which is 10 million, whereas our economic is $137 million of income business-wise, and theirs is over $137 billion, and theirs is over $500 billion. And so we look at the difference in proportion to them in terms of the number of them here in the country and their wealth in the production of business that they create versus our own. And this is only simply because of how we support, where we shop, where our dollars spend and don't spend. And so these are products that everyone does use in their homes, in their businesses, etc. And we offer high quality, economically, environmentally friendly products and people friendly, because our products don't have some of the toxins that a number of other paper products actually have.
Right. That's an important point. It's healthier made products as well. Kamosi Muhammad, thank you very much for joining us. I apologize for this being such a short segment. We do appreciate the work you're doing, and people can follow up with that work at freedompapercompany.com. Freedompapercompany.com. And thanks again for the example you're providing.
Yes, sir, brother. And if I could real quickly, there's a store called Sinbad Natural Food Co-op. You will be able to find our product there starting this month in Washington, D.C., Northwest 6224 3rd Street, Northwest D.C.
That's what's up. Thank you very much once again for joining us here at I Mix What I Like in WPFW 89.3 FM. And again, folks, that's freedompapercompany.com. Take care of yourself, man. Peace to you and your whole crew.
Peace to you too, brother.
Thanks. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break here. Again, I Mix What I Like, WPFW 89.3 FM, and come right back with Ms. Jamila Lemieux for this, I think, exciting conversation about the film Straight Outta Compton and what and who are missing from it. So don't go anywhere. Much more coming up right here. Again, I Mix What I Like, WPFW 89.3 FM.
It's Black Fist Fridays.
I Mix What I Like. What I Like. What I Like.
Hello. What's your only girl? Girl, I think about. You're the only girl for me. You're all I think about. You're special. No, I love you.
Yeah, Michelle Lay, No More Lies, right here at WPFW 89.3 FM. I Mix What I Like is the show at I Mix What I Like for all your relevant social media. You know, so anyway, joining us now is Ms. Jamila Lemieux, who is said to be Chicago-born, Howard-trained, and Brooklyn-made. Our heroine is a writer, editor, feminist, mom, troublemaker, provocateur, and proud millennial game changer. And among many other things, she is also the senior digital editor for Ebony and joins us now, I believe, from her home in New York City. Welcome to the program, Jamila Lemieux. Thank you for taking the time.
Hi. You can tell I'm at home because you hear my daughter screaming in the background.
That's how it works. That's how it works. We get it. We get it. And we appreciate it. So absolutely. And again, thank you for joining us. So as I said at the top, there was a number of things that I learned from your piece recently published. I believe it was just last week in the Washington Times. Was it? I'm sorry.
Washington Post.
Washington Post. Right. Of course. And then I went and looked at an article, an essay recently written by Dee Barnes, who is the subject of some of your own discussion. And folks, the piece that I'm referring to that Jamila wrote is White Critics and Rap Fans Love Straight Outta Compton, but they're missing half the story. So let me just start with that. Let me have you just tell us a little bit about what is that missing half of the story, and we'll go from there.
You know, yeah, I mean, obviously the omission of the Dee Barnes assault from the film, just from a movie-making standpoint, I just think it's ahistorical and just wrong, you know.
And for those who may not remember, I'm sorry to cut you off, but for those who might not remember, who is Dee Barnes and what was that incident?
So Dee Barnes is the host of a popular, hold on one second, I'm literally running from a toddler right now.
No, that's cool, I understand.
Anyway, Dee Barnes is the host of a popular music, a hip-hop show, which is kind of crazy to think of the early 90s there being a hip-hop television show that was nationally syndicated on Fox.
Right.
And she had interviewed NWA a number of times and had a good relationship with the group and many other rappers and folks in the industry. And there was a package that ran that featured an interview with NWA, and at the end of that interview, they cut to a comment from Ice Cube saying some disparaging things about the group. This was shortly after he'd left.
Mm-hmm.
And the remaining members of the group took that very personally and blamed Dee for it, even though it was not, in fact, her doing.
Right.
And so they confronted her at a party, and Dr. Dre very brutally beat her up. You know, this isn't an urban legend. This isn't something that people are unclear about. Did it really happen? How bad was it? She was assaulted. She was beat down.
And nowadays, you could just Google the pictures and see them. I mean, and there's no ambiguity here. This is not...
There's no ambiguity here. You know, there was a trial. You know, I believe he pled no contest, and it was bad. He did pay her an undisclosed amount of money. And he had to film, like, a domestic violence public service announcement or something ridiculous. There wasn't any real severe penalty for him doing this. And I think one of the worst things about, I'm so sorry that we're having these toddler problems this morning.
They're not problems. They're not problems at all. They're toddler contributions to the program.
Okay. She's crying. She's crying on behalf of all the women in hip hop.
Exactly. She feels the vibe of the abuse that women suffer and have suffered and continue to suffer. So absolutely, yeah. So, but if you can, please go ahead. Yeah.
Right. So the incident was a very big story, and I'm in my early 30s. So my NWA memories, you know, I remember the group happening. I remember the controversy, and I remember the assault.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very young then. So that's one of my strongest memories of NWA, you know, from in real time, was the fact that Dr. Dre had beat up a woman.
Right.
And so that was not included, referenced, mentioned. As if it was just a thing that happened, which is no big deal, which is really, to me, bad filmmaking. And, of course, you know, there were people that felt that Ms. Barnes was telling her story to be some sort of opportunist, or that she had some grand scheme for material gain, which is what is always suggested any time a woman speaks out, you know, and particularly when a man is involved or a powerful man, that she's about to give something. This is someone who's had her career really ended by this event and has not been able to travel and move in the industry in the way that she did before, especially because of how big of a star that Dr. Dre became
right
after that. So,
I mean, there were a number of things associated with that, because I went back and I did belatedly, and it was all my fault, reach out to Dee Barnes to see if we could get her to join the show. And she graciously had to decline because she was just overbooked. But she was very friendly in the you know, social media exchange we had. And so I appreciate her, and I encourage people to check out her essay in Gawker as well, that we're going to talk about in just a few more minutes. Because it outlines some history that one piece in particular that I did not know at all, was not up on at all. But the first thing that I went, when I went back and looked online for some of the old Pump It Up, episodes, you know, I think I'm about 10 years or so older than you, but mm-hmm. I vaguely remembered the show itself, although I remember the incident very clearly. But looking back at the show, I mean, there are a number of things that I think that are worthy of note. Number one, that it was a black woman hosting this nationally syndicated show. It was very well produced, and it's, I think, should be part of the historical memory more than I think it is when people refer back to hip hop media and the history of it. You know, it's a lot more than Yo MTV Raps, which obviously gets a lot of that attention. But I think that was one point that struck me when I went back and looked at this. But there's something else that you also, there's a number of other issues that you also raise that in this piece in the Washington Post that I really do like. The first one being this emphasis, and this is something that Harry Allen brought up when we had our interview with him a week or so ago as well, that it's white audiences and white critics that are praising this film almost without exception. I mean, and you note, and we agree, and I agree on with you on this, that the film is good. I mean, and that's part of what I think is the problem here, that the film is so good that it makes it, the impact of its omissions and its inaccuracies more severe. But but this point that you and he both raise, I'd like you to expand on, if you would, is this issue of the white critic and the white audience member being the true target or those who at least truly appreciate this film, and that piece should not be should not be ignored.
Yeah, it's interesting when they get to white critics and white fan bases that are being targeted, when they're the focus. The way the black stories are told and received is, you know, inherently problematic. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that group has even less investment in the dignity of black women mm-hmm. than black male rap fans, right? Because at least they ostensibly do have mothers and relationships with women, and, you know, some of them are good, some of them are bad, but they have black women in their life. Black women matter to them in some level. This group of people can experience this movie and not even bat an eye at a half-naked woman getting pushed out of a hotel room and told mm-hmm. by Felicia, or the fact that the Dee Barnes assault is not there. And I just really, again, it's kind of from, like, if we only look at it from the standpoint of making a good movie, that you leave out one of the biggest moments in this group's very short run.
That's right. That's right.
You know, to not tell that part of the story is historically irresponsible. And I just, it was interesting because there were a number of white critics that just, you know, they casually mentioned, you know, sexist language or misogynistic, homophobic lyrics. Or they'll say, you know, they didn't include the Dee Barnes assault. However, the film is so good, blah, blah, blah. It's just really about how
good the film
is.
Right.
But I just think, when I think of N.W.A. and their impact in hip-hop, as someone who has been a student of hip-hop and has followed the culture since I was a very young girl, I think that their biggest legacy, unfortunately, really is being a part of that tide that and I don't want to be one of those people who kind of have a fake a revisionist history of some magical time where all hip-hop was quote-unquote positive or conscious. That was never the case.
Right.
But when you have this group blowing up nationally, and how hyper-sexist they were, and how everything was very violent and very sexist. Most of N.W.A. songs were not about the police.
Mm. Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, really, that was as close to... that was as close as they got to anything that could be considered progressive or advanced radical politics. I mean, and it everything else, I think, to your point, whenever they spoke otherwise of violence, it was either directed at black women or black people generally. And I was reminded when I watched the film, when I'm watching the film, I'm sitting there and I'm saying all the words to the songs. I forgot that I knew how much I remembered the lyrics and how much I loved those songs when they came out. And I was totally swept up in it as a fan, as a young man at the time, when they came out as well. And I do want to reemphasize the point you just make, that N.W.A. as a full original group only had one album, and Ice Cube himself has more albums. All of them have more albums as solo artists than they do as a collective. And this was something I asked Harry Allen too. Like, what did he think about why this group of all the groups in hip hop that have been selected and targeted for a major motion picture film and green had a film such as this green lit? Why was N.W.A.? Why wouldn't it have been any other group? And his point when I asked why wasn't it Public Enemy, and I agree with this, and I think you raise it as well, is that a Public Enemy story is not going to have, as he called, all the bacchanalia that you see with N.W.A., mm-hmm. which is not what white audiences primarily want to see. They don't want to see a group that is not involved in the hypersexualism, hypermisogyny, and black on black hostility that you see with N.W.A. Folks, we're talking with Jamila Lemieux here at WPFW 89.3 FM. The show is I Mix What I Like, and you can join us at I Mix What I Like and all your relevant social media. I Mix What I Like at gmail.com, and of course, imixwhatilike.org for more on the show and more. We're going to take a very quick break and come back with more Ms. Jamila Lemieux and all of you, so don't go anywhere. Much more coming up again right here, WPFW 89.3. Back in just a minute. Peace.
It's Black Fist Fridays.
I Mix What I Like.
a must. It's the lady of rage still kicking up dust. So let me loosen up my bra strap. And let me boost you with my raw rap. Cause I'ma break it down to the nitty gritty one time. When it comes to the lyrics, I get busy with mine. Busy as a beaver, you best believe her. This grand diva's running shit with the speed of a cheetah. Me the lyrical murderer, I'm serving them like two scoops of chocolate. Check out how I rock it. I'm the one that's throwing bolos. You better roll a rolo to find out I'm the number one solo. The capital R-A, now kick it to the G-E. I bring the things to light, but you still can't see me. I flow like the monthly, you can't cramp my style. For those that tried to poke me, here's a pampering child. No need to say mo, check the flow. Rage in the back once more, so now you know I rock rough and stuff with my afro hooks.
I mix what I like, what I like.
Faded all, y'all know who it should be. OG with two puffs that look like Biggie. There ain't many, if it all any, that can keep it cracking like me. The yakin' Henny, splattin' plenty with Mac and Simi. You can't see me never blind, but up with Benny. I'ma cut above the rest, you be that squeamish type. That tower in Italy, when I'll leave them leaning like. I got monumental potential on the instrumental. When I flip through the dental, it's sold up. Needle in the thimble, weaving Kim Kimbo. Into the dragon, that spray that flame that's been rekindled. Hotter than a chemical burn, a blaze. Go against rage, better give them a urn. I don't give a fuck if you're white, black, or mulatto. Asian, American, Native, or Mexicano. Mano y mano, you can step in some guano. Mess around, playboy, get found, drowned in the grotto. I come out cutting and scratching, my fight game's Serato. My fight game is Floyd, like when he destroyed Cotto. These dumbbells biting their thumbnails, but when one fails to realize, still I rise, still I be fly. Still I'm a FIFA, full from a giant for you, New Jacks, in the land I come from. So, middle finger to my critics on the internet. Don't be upset, cause I'm a vet and I ain't finished yet. Never forget, I turn the booth into a casket. The questions that they asking is Ray Jurassic, yeah. I'm a dinosaur, I'm a tyrannosaur. Respects, I dare you to come test. Heifers won't be, shit, you ain't that built. I put carnations on that mad cow and make a pet milk. You don't know this outcome. I spent time on Hawks, Geronimo, scalp them. X amount, L, Hodge, Malik, El Shabazz, Malcolm, Lady of Rage. Get outdone by the one you can't outgun. Release the crack and I'm a beast when I'm rapping. Extraterrestrial, sapiosexual. You think it's a game like basketball trunks? Well, I'ma skip the crossover and go straight for the dunk. I feel like Lisa, let's see, Lopez and Leslie. Now waterfalls and injuries can put out my spark. I'm the flamethrower, lead him out the darkness. It's the world premiere like the birth of Christopher Martin. DJ, DJ, DJ Premier. DJ, DJ, DJ Premier.
Premier.
DJ, DJ, DJ Premier. I mix what I like. Back again, I mix what I like, WPFW 89.3 FM. So that was just a little Lady of Rage, then and now, Afro Puffs, and then a track she put out last year with DJ Premier, of course, house favorite here at I Mix What I Like. The track is called Chemical Burn, showing that Lady of Rage still has got the skills, though you don't hear about them or hear of her at all in the new film Straight Outta Compton about the rap group N.W.A. In fact, as D. Barnes notes, Yo-Yo, a female rapper who worked with Ice Cube after he left N.W.A., was nowhere to be found, nor are women who worked with Dre later in his career like Jewel and Lady of Rage. They both contributed tremendously to the ultimate sound of the classic album The Chronic, end quote, D. Barnes. And like I said, as you can see, Lady of Rage is still doing it. Anyway, welcome back to Ms. Jamila Lemieux, who, among many other things, is the editor, the digital editor of Ebony, and has written a piece most recently in the Washington Post about the film Straight Outta Compton, called White Critics and Rap Fans Love Straight Outta Compton, But They're Missing Half the Story. We welcome her back to the show.
Thank you.
So, you also, there was another point that you raised that I did catch at the time, but admittedly it did sort of fade from my focus, and I was so glad you brought back in your Washington Post piece. You said that the commercial for Straight Outta Compton, which curiously chooses a black cop as the face of the police brutality faced by members of the legendary rap group, though the actual movie would depict a far more intense violence at the hand of white officers, even managed to find placement during the first Republican presidential debate, ironically airing just after the evening's only question about Black Lives Matter movement. actually, you know, rereading your quote, I think you were a little more favorable on this issue than I was, because I thought that the film, beyond just the commercial, unnecessarily centered a black police officer in the hostility faced. Although you are right, I mean, they make the point to, you know, demonstrate the racist hostility of white officers. But I felt that one particular scene that seemed to sustain a focus on police brutality of the group members themselves, focused on a black cop, which I thought was, again, a curious choice, as you put it. I'm wondering if you would want to elaborate on that point that you made just there, that I just quoted.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, that's how the commercial and the trailer were edited, because when you see the movie, most of the, they had issues with many police officers. Most of them were white and male, but that, you know, in the bit of the film that's going to everyone in the United States, whether they choose to see the movie or not, you see a black cop, and you have Gary Heller, and who's the other guy? Now I'm blanking on his name. Who's been, was it Lior Cohen?
Yes.
Who have been central to particularly Dr. Dre's career and the career of the group. So, you know, and they're kind of pleading for these guys. And, oh, you know, these are artists. These are good guys. They're to be treated this way. I just thought that was really problematic. And, you know, I don't, these decisions are oftentimes made by creative folks. There's not, you know, a group of people deciding what's the worst messaging that we can provide for black people, period. You know, but It said something that made me uncomfortable,
by
whether
the way,
that was intentional or not.
I actually, my position on it is that these things, the popular commercial product, media product, are always intentional on one level or another. And I really always do fall back on something Fanon wrote years ago, where he said that in a colonial racist society, every cultural artifact is known to be racist, that there is no unconscious racism. But again, to your point, I don't know exactly the process in that decision making, but, or how that particular decision was made, but, I give him conscious credit for all of it, or conscious blame for it, all of it. By the way, for folks who weren't aware, or not, maybe not paying attention, or maybe who even wondering why a sustained focus on this film, for me at least, the reason above those, or in addition to those raised by Jamila and Dee Barnes and others, is that for the third weekend in a row, the hip hop biopic Straight Outta Compton dominated at the U.S. box office, earning an impressive $13.2 million, pushing its domestic total to a whopping $134 million. This is even a few days ago, so it's even more than that at this point, making it the highest grossing musical biopic of all time, according to Variety. It is also the first film to top U.S. box office for three consecutive weekends since Jurassic World. So this is getting a lot of attention. It's I think having its intended negative impact in terms of the popular conversation around hip hop and history and misogyny, etc. And I want to come back again to the point that you raise here, and I think this is very important. Several sentences here, you say that the reviews penned almost exclusively for large publications by white male writers are glowing. Complex's Cameron Wolfe referred to the film as, quote, almost perfect, short of a historically inaccurate baseball cap choice. Another hailed it as, quote, rewarding for viewers of any background except perhaps police, end quote. At Vulture, David Edelstein makes an awkward reference to August Wilson's play Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. He might as well have said, I know black art, like, really? And calls it, quote, intensely human and personal in its characterizations and attention to detail. But as you point out, Jamila, doesn't mention the many women who somehow just didn't make it to the story in a meaningful way. And Dee Barnes makes a similar point in her Gawker essay, that if you really want to tell the human story of these people, as people keep claiming this film does, these stories should have been included in them. One question I do have for you is just sort of playing devil's advocate here somewhat, is, but aren't all of these instances that we know of violence against women by members or former members of NWA incidences that occurred many years ago? Aren't they all old news at this point. Haven't Dre, as the film wants us to certainly believe, hasn't Dre evolved into this mature businessman, decent human being, blah, 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 blah? Hasn't Ice Cube become this children's movie star and ultimately good for humanity, et cetera, and so forth? And Eazy-E is, of course, not with us anymore. Ren isn't, I think, unfortunately, in some cases, relevant in hip-hop at this point. Shouldn't we be just like, you know, well, this is old news. Isn't there a statute of limitations on beating women?
Well, NWA is old news.
That's a good point.
The group, and it's funny, and I got beat up a little bit for saying this on Twitter, partially because I think some people took it out of context, but it was really interesting to see all this excitement over this group when a lot of the folks who are old enough to remember NWA, so people that are over 30 or, you know, in their 40s, who may listen, who had that money, they listen to Biggie on a regular basis, right? They listen to a Tribe Called Quest on a regular basis. These other hip-hop records that came out in the late 80s, early 90s, they have, you know, if not the whole album, they've got their favorite songs on their iTunes or their Tidal or Spotify or whatever. And I rarely, if ever, just hear an NWA song anywhere prior to this movie coming out. And I've listened to a lot of rap radio shows and went to a lot of hip-hop parties and hung out with rappers. And it's just, you don't really hear their music kind of being treated or revered as classics in the way that, you know, a One More Chance or Get Money or, you know, some of Tupac's records or Dre's records or Snoop's records. And so the idea that we're supposed to be so in love with this group now that we're willing to look past one of the biggest parts of their legacy, because it's, again, it's not just the assault on D. Barnes or the assault on Misha Lay or Terry B., who was the white female rapper that Eazy was working with, who Dre also assaulted. It's not just about these three women. It's just about how this group's particular brand of misogyny, putting this language into the hip-hop universe, being amongst the first to talk about race.
Right.
To talk about, you know, beating up women, to talk about having, you know, sexual encounters with underage girls with no shame and no retribution, you know, and for us to now think of them as heroes as opposed to saying they impacted culture in a significant way and we should recognize that and we should, you know, examine and think about how we end up at a Beats by Dre and an Apple Music. And
right.
It's part of this story that is a very American story.
And him producing this film.
Yeah, and it was a it was a good movie.
But I mean, but that he's the one producing this film. So I mean,
right.
He's
producing it. But you know what is interesting? And it may not be the best example because, you know, Biggie is dead. But Notorious depicted his violence against Faith Ann Little Kim.
It did. That's true.
And it was
true.
Very clear, you know. And I've heard. Sorry.
She said she's just co-signing the point. She's like, yeah. She said, yeah.
But, I've heard, you know, other stories of him assaulting those women in particular that weren't depicted in the film. But there was no question about the fact that not only did he hit these two girls, but that he'd done it on more than one occasion.
Right. By the way, you know, that was another point I really liked in your piece that I did not catch. I have to admit I missed this one too. This was slick. I'm glad you caught it and put it out that at the most aggressively anti-woman violent moment in the film Straight Outta Compton, where they're pushing all these they're you know, hiding from this party and they push Felicia out of the hotel room. I did not catch that was a reference to the Friday film. The by Felicia. I didn't catch that.
And it was meant to be comic relief.
Right,
you know,
but
it's supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember because I saw, I forget which review, but somebody said, oh, and the hook, you know, don't miss the hilarious by Felicia line.
Right.
And I saw it, and so I'm waiting for a joke. And I'm like, that's not funny.
Right.
You know,
right,
I mean, we hadn't been introduced to this woman as some sort of unscrupulous character who's throwing some. You know, we didn't see there being a reason for Felicia to be pushed out.
I don't know. I don't agree with that. The reason we were given is the film, I think, wants us to understand is that she's just a loose woman. Scantily clad, you know, she's a groupie trying to mess with these artists, and she deserves what she got. That's the context that I think that they do try to draw in the film, so that it isn't seen as anything hostile, you know. And her man's looking for her.
You know? It's really hostile to me.
I'm saying to you, I agree with you that it is hostile. Yeah. What I'm saying is that the film, I think, intends for it to not be seen as hostile in the sense that they're setting it up that she is someone who would deserve to be right. mushed out of a hotel room and sent out to her man who was just trying to shoot up the room to get her out of there.
And that's the problem for me with NWA.
Mm-hmm.
And with this film, the idea is that you are an unscrupulous character if you're a woman for the crime of being interested in having sex with rappers who go out of their way to wear the jewelry, to have the sneakers, to have the money and the bottle service and all the trash, all the things to make women in general, and a particular kind of woman,
right?
You know, attracted to them or interested in being in their company. Women who are attracted to money and fame and sparkly things. These are the women you want around. You go out of your way to compel them, but then in your music, they're imagined as bitches and hoes. It's like you're angry at women who have sex with you. You're angry at women who find you attractive and compelling or interesting. And I'm not saying that some of these young women aren't looking for a come up or, you know, opportunity to have a child with a rapper or to become a rapper girlfriend and for that to become that's not part of their life plan on some level. But if you want these women around you, why are you so hostile toward them for providing what you want, which is affirmation, attention, and sex?
But also to your point is that even if these women were quote unquote scandalous or unscrupulous and wanting and just trying to get over on these artists or get something from these artists, their story isn't being told in the film, so there's no context for it as that you would get in other characters who are the focus of the film, where their imperfections are contextualized or maybe more balanced, or in the case that you're making here, totally omitted. So it's that all we get of these women is this particular immediate moment in their lives that can be characterized or mischaracterized in any number of ways to justify the broader, intent of the film, but they're not given the time to, have their stories fleshed out, pun intended, I suppose, to more appropriately understand why they might be making these decisions in the first place. There's one other thing I wanted to bring up. I was trying to save it to the end of the show because for me, it was also the kind of, gotcha moment too that I just did not know. So when I'm reading Dee Barnes' Gawker piece, she's talking about how F. Gary Gray is the filmmaker of Straight Outta Compton left out all of these women, including the incident with Dee Barnes being beaten by Dre, and the multiple beatings that she and others have received from Dre and at that time. And then she writes, F. Gary Gray, the man whose film made $60 million last weekend as it erased my attack from history, was also behind the camera to film the moment that launched that very attack. He was my cameraman for Pump It Up. End quote. I did not know that until I read this piece.
I didn't either. And I was with the writer, Rich Juzwiak, who did the As Told To with Dee Barnes. Those are her words. He just worked with her on the story. And the way that he was able to get her to write that was that he'd written something prior to the movie coming out, and I think it was very simply titled, Remember the Time That Dr. Dre Assaulted a Female Journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though we've been kind of having these conversations in feminist circles and, certain hip-hop circles for a while, particularly with the movie being ready to come out, because Gawker having the huge readership they do, that really forced it into the national consciousness. And there are a lot of people, particularly people under 30, who did not know that it had even happened.
Right. That's right.
Which is why erasing it from the film is so dangerous. That the idea that people could have watched this and never thought of there being an NWA woman problem, because we're not probing the misogyny at all. We're not dealing with Gray's particular incidents of violence. It's just simply not fair. And I ran into him last night, and we talked about, how the story with Dee came together and, getting her to open up. And she was, at first she was kind of hesitant. She wasn't going to do it, and finally she saw this was an important opportunity for her to write what the film did wrong and to speak up for herself and for others. And that was so powerful for her to acknowledge the other women.
Right.
She didn't just say, this is what happened to me. It was like, well, this is what this person was doing at that time.
If
and she, she was so gracious. You know, she was so incredibly gracious. And how, I mean, how soon I think I would be able to speak of Dr. Dre or F. Gary Gray, who I think is kind of, what's the word? I think what he's done to her is as bad as how she was treated by Dr. Dre in that incident. You know, considering the years, you know, and considering that now he is completely injected new life into his career, made all this money and got all this attention, and could have said, Dre, we got to deal with this.
We got to deal
with
it.
There's a way we can deal with
this. That's right.
You know, we can humanize you. We can talk about you moving past it. We can express, you know, they could have reimagined that as him going home and crying about it, you know, afterward. I mean, there's so many things that they could have done.
That's right.
And they didn't. And they, until... Honestly, that apology from Dr. Dre felt so forced and so insincere, and I felt that was an Apple thing. You know, I honestly don't think that was Dr. Dre speaking for himself. I think it was, you are now creating a problem for our company.
Right.
And you need to acknowledge this, you know, because before it just seemed that they were going to kind of skirt over it. That's gonna fall on you.
But just that Gray was the cameraman. I think that's kind of, I think that's trifling. Actually, I mean that you gotta find. I mean, if you could deal with, they could find a way to deal with the Jerry curl and the you know, the disco jackets that Dre was wearing. If they could find a way to address all of those issues, they could find a way certainly to make this thing happen. And I think even the examples you suggest just now could have worked. I mean, you know, because the film was done well. They know what they're doing. They know how to make a movie, and the people they cast were well cast, and the acting was well done, and the writing was well done. The story is well told. So they were clearly talented enough to have pulled this off. That's too bad. I do just want to say very quickly, because just very publicly and very honestly, this at one point had created some unnecessary, unfortunate tension between me and someone else. I do want to note that and this, I'm disassociating my comments that I'm about to make from you and your work. I'm not trying to put this on you or anything like that. But I do need to make the point that the Washington Post itself is not some bastion of progressive thought. And some warehouse of progressive ideas related to black people, women, or anything else for that matter. I am glad your piece got in there. I'm glad you got to say what you had to say in that piece, and that you said so many good things in there. But I also don't want to kind of let them off the hook either. Like, I'm coming down on Straight Outta Compton in this film and letting the Washington Post off the hook, which I think is an institution is far more damaging than even this film, but to their credit, they got your piece in there, and I think it's very strong and very helpful. And I do encourage that people check it out. Again, Jamila Lemieux's piece is white critics and rap fans love Straight Outta Compton, but they're missing half the story, and even more than half, given so much of what I didn't know before reading yours and Dee Barnes's work on it. Jamila Lemieux, I greatly appreciate you taking the time, and we appreciate your daughter's willingness to participate. And I look forward to catching up with you again. Thank you for joining us here at I Mix What I Like at WPFW.
Of course, and thank you for having me.
All right, good people. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. And following this line of what I did not know about this movie, we're going to ride out with a track today. And this one I am going to dedicate specifically to Dr. Hate. This is what you get when you don't make it into work. This is all on you. Because somebody that I'd never even heard of, to be quite honest, but was associated with Dre and NWA, and was a female MC, and was apparently as well abused by Dre, is a woman known as Terry B. Red Eagle, you ever familiar with her? In this track we about to play, Murder, She Wrote. You familiar with that? The track is dope, but this goes out to Dr. Hate. Much hate and love to him and his family and to all of you. We're going to stick around for community comment coming up here in just a minute. Again, at I Mix What I Like for all of your relevant social media. imixwhatilike.org for more on this show and more. Shout out to all of those who participated, Freedom Paper Company, Jamila Lemieux, and for all of you for listening. And real quick, you know, it was nice to hear Bill Fletcher's show in a little positive discussion about my father and his work with the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. That's some history that needs to be further discussed because it continues to impact us today. So shout out to them as well. Red Eagle, thanks again. We'll be back with community comment in just a minute. But this Murder, She Wrote goes out to Dr. Haight. Back in just a minute. Peace. If you're willing to fight for it, as Fred Hampton used to say, we'll catch you in the whirlwind, everybody.
It's Black Fist Fridays.
I mix what I like.
I'm ready.
I'm acting as a microphone murdering MCs. I'm acting as a microphone murdering MCs. I'm acting as a microphone murdering MCs.
Steadily, I approach a circus rap with my melody. Them not knowing I'm beautiful but deadly. Remove the pen from my pocket, take the mic, plug it in the socket, proceed to rock it. No need to stop it if the beat is dope. Quincy Dio, drop it for the bomb bomb shell from hell. And if you call me a devil, well, I'm Italian. But if you wanna step and get wild, I'll take your ass out mafia style. And a millimeter's a rhyme on the charts with a bullet. Got my finger on the trigger, then they pull it. For being controversial, not commercial, I'm down. Of the underground, I got the gat on the strap, you on the scope, gun on the rap, called Murder, She Wrote.
I'm acting as a microphone murdering MCs. I'm acting as a microphone murdering MCs. I'm acting as a microphone murdering MCs.
Murder, She Wrote.
My ballpoint pen is my weapon, loaded with knowledge, my lyrics are stepping. Better yet, kept in my mind, had to find the key. You gotta rewind, or talk. Straight up fact, like the management company that's standing back of this woman and assuming that the girl ain't down, will lead you to the label which reads Cocktown. Not brown, not black, as a matter of fact, I'm white. So believe the hype, deep six in the mix, Quincy D, he kicks the bass as they open the case, but there ain't no witness, you can't get with this. And if you try, you'll end up on my hit list. So guess the rest, press key quote, dead on arrival for Murder, She Wrote.
I mix what I like.
I'm mad as a microphone murdering MC. I'm acting as a microphone murdering MCs. I'm acting as a microphone murdering MCs.
Murder, She Wrote.
A low profile, that's the style. The set don't sweat, no need to get wild. When it comes to violence, I'm down for the crime. No silencer on this rhyme. Homicide recital, the title is murder. If you're pointing the finger, then you hurt her. The lips are red, pen packing lead. Not soft, coming off from the top of my head. You're better off dead than to try to get raw. I'm the gangster's mall, above the law. Yeah, I said it, wanna make something of it. Go ahead, step up, the crowd'll love it. And you'll be played like a snitch. Well introduced to a ruthless hit. So on that note, here's one last quote. Case closed.
That's all she wrote. I'm acting as a microphone murdering MCs. I'm acting as a microphone murdering MCs.
I mix what I like.